Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Karate Kid to my Top Gun, it's Dan.
Good morning, Scott. Good evening, Dan.
That's right, our time difference has put us in the two phases of the day. So, I think we're both trying... Actually, we came into this evening wondering how we'd even be able to stay awake, because I think we both have very, very long days. How are you feeling at this point, though?
I'm feeling good. It's been a while since we talked about this show, so it's good to see how we feel and how we,
how we get energized from it all. I mean,
yeah.
I'm overflowing and bubbling with joy about this show right now. I'm like a fat guy in a hot tub after too many tacos or something, because I think we have said many times before, not just that this is one of our favorite shows, this is probably the show that more often than not, it has always been our favorite to podcast about. We haven't actually mentioned what show we're talking about, Better Call Saul. Duh. So we're just thrilled that it's back.
Oh, yes.
So tonight, as we did quite often during the first two seasons, we are actually recording this podcast fairly shortly after we've both watched the episode. Actually, you just finished watching the episode. I finished about an hour ago, so I actually watched a good chunk of the Talking Saul that followed it. But this is probably going to be more of a rarity moving forward. I don't think we're going to be recording the same night unless there are some special circumstances that happen to make it necessary. So this will be, like I said, a rarity.
Yeah, unless something like this is really crazy and we just want to get on and talk about it right away, we can always do that and record it and do it the next night too and whatever. But who knows?
Possible.
We'll see. Whatever we want to fuck do, we got this shit.
If we do kind of sort of have something quite different in mind after this week, and anyone who's listened to our last Legion podcast, I believe I talked about it there, knows about this already. And anyone who skipped one of the best shows of the year so far, and a handful of our best podcasts too, I think. The last few, at least, were, in my humble opinion. With the return of Fargo next week, which means we get the two shows we really like talking about the most all at the same time, probably due to time and sheer practicality, we're going to attempt to combine the two shows into one podcast. So the unofficial title of that podcast will be Better Call Fargo. So we'll see how it goes. We may alternate the order of how we talk about the shows. Sometimes there may be reasons why, like you just said, we may do a one-off for a Better Call Saul or Fargo, depending. But that's kind of the idea moving forward. Mainly because we just can't spend that many days and nights podcasting together. We can only tolerate each other so much.
Yeah, that hasn't been a problem for quite a long time. But we do have things we got to do and got to get up early, and sometimes staying up late can kind of hose us a little bit.
Yeah. Sort of like a sort of friend of ours on another podcast. We do have lives, so there's that. I bet the Fargo premiere is probably going to require a lot more heavy lifting from us, because that's going to be introducing an entire roster of new characters and storylines. Where at least a Better Call Saul, we're just continuing arcs and threads and characters we've already met, Although there'll be some that we've maybe met, but on a different series coming episodes, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So, we'll see how that goes. I think we're thinking those will more likely than not be recorded at some point on the weekend, again, it's a lot about scheduling because you have scheduling issues at times. I'm sure I do every once in a while. But, you know, we'll bomb that bridge when we get to it.
Hell no, man. We're going to record that next one on 420, motherfucker.
Wait, Hitler's birthday? Oh, no, you mean. So, enough about the future of podcasting. I mean, well, our future podcasts, at least. I think it's time that we dive into the show that we have been waiting almost an entire year for. And, of course, I'm talking about Better Call Saul. Now, let me start right off by saying I'm probably going to avoid doing much recapping in these podcasts. And I know I've probably said that a dozen times before, and then I end up doing a two-hour transcription of an episode. But in the spirit of being not just economical, but also having a bit more fun yapping back and forth with Dan here, that's really going to be the goal. So screw starting off with a recap. Let's lead off with, you know, what was your first impression and opinion on this season premiere? Which, you know, just to be professional about it, was titled Mabel, directed by Vince Gilligan himself. And the two masterminds behind Better Call Saul, Gilligan and Peter Gould, actually co-wrote the episode. So what was your first impression? What was your take on the episode overall?
Well, I guess I hadn't given the format of the episode a lot of thought, but I was a little kind of pleasantly surprised that they continued both storylines essentially like right as after they ended last year, which isn't the kind of thing they do. Well, they didn't do that between seasons one and two, so I kind of like that they did that. It just seems a little bit different because a lot of times there is some kind of a time jump in between things, and I thought it was kind of cool they did it like this. I enjoyed seeing the flash forward mall scenes too, because that was kind of they showed more of that. And since I roamed around that mall and doing my like Better Call Saul / Breaking Bad like photo stocking mission in Albuquerque last year, I thought it was kind of cool seeing like more angles of that mall that like I actually recognized, because I kind of wandered around there as I like, you know, creepily tried to take pictures and not look like a fucking, you know, rube.
Well, hard to avoid.
Yes.
I couldn't actually remember. I thought maybe they did pick up where they left off at the beginning of season two, but now I'm kind of drawing a blank on it. You know, I'm tired. So if they did, they did. If they didn't, they didn't. Who cares?
Well, maybe they did. I remember he was like, he drove off or something. I don't know. I can't fucking remember. It's late. Nearly.
Yeah. Consider this be one of the consequences of recording the same night. So no research, not much research can be done right after we finish watching. But I also enjoy the fact that we really, in some cases, not just picked up from where we left off, we even replay the moment a bit. Like when we picked up with the Mike storyline, we'd already seen that play out, so they just to remind us, they played it out again. But yeah, I was happy that they did that, because, and I guess they also did it with him and Chuck. I guess they did replay the same thing. So, which was smart, because of course they could have just gotten away with putting that in the, you know, previously on Better Call Saul or something like that. But I like that, and to a certain extent, they did it with, you know, with a different perspective or a different angle, or, you know, through the foil sheets instead of like in the room with them, which was kind of an interesting take on it. You can see that Vince Gilligan is really having fun trying to find new ways to, you know, position the camera with his cinematographer and different little fun things throughout the episode. He definitely doesn't go for the boring shot quite throughout this episode, I thought. It was, you know,
yeah, I really noticed that kind of stuff more as I watched movies that are a little bit better with I can't fucking talk. Just movies that have more artistry and like technical merit to them. As I watch TV shows, you can definitely see like the people that, you know, actually like are kind of into that and want to do a good job. I mean, even like watching Next Generation, like the episodes that Jonathan Frakes develops, I mean, you can tell he's like going out of his way to like get better and like learn and like do stuff differently. And it's kind of like cool to see. And Vince Gilligan's definitely, you know, in the same ilk as the Frakes, you know, and some of the other directors.
You know, I was tempted to bash you for yet again bringing up a Star Trek show in one of these podcasts, but I did watch most of Talking Saul before we started recording. And during the conversation on that show, Vince Gilligan actually made a Star Trek reference, an original series reference when he was describing Albuquerque. He was talking about the episode with the space hippies where everything looks great, but turns out to be kind of really poisonous to you. And that's how he described
the way to Eden. It's terrible.
That's how he described Albuquerque, where it looks really great, but then, the way the climate and everything will kill you. So that's why this was funny. Oh, wow. Two weird Trek references out of nowhere talking about a show that has nothing to do with Star Trek. So let's flip back to, once again, as they did in the first two seasons, we did start out with Gene in Nebraska. Hey, quick question, and again, considering what we couldn't remember just a few moments ago, maybe not the best question to ask you, but I'll ask anyway. I don't recall if we heard him speak in the previous two seasons. Is this the first? I feel like it's the first time I heard him speak.
I don't know. I think he might have said something. Didn't he get locked in like the garbage room or something?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure.
Was he yelling to be helped? Maybe. Okay. Then.
Yeah. He must have said something. At least some kind of whatever. He must have been doing some kind of talking there. But I'm not sure if he did any like talking to people.
Yeah, I don't recall him actually having conversations with. But again, that's the problem with where it's been over a year since the show is on. Not to mention we're talking about the first episode of that season, so that's more like 14 months. And I didn't do a rewatch. I know some people out there did. They can comment on our Facebook page and let us know, because I just simply don't remember, and neither do you, obviously.
I think we both wish we would have had time to reward ourselves with the rewatch of the first two fine seasons, but we just didn't do it.
Honestly, not to fall back on an excuse, but as you know, way too much going on as of late.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I just couldn't do it. I mean, my DVR is overflowed with too much stuff as is. So getting back to the Nebraska sequence or the Cinnabon sequence or however we want to refer to it, I liked it because it seemed like they gave us a little bit more with it than they had in the previous two seasons. It seemed longer. It seemed like there was more of a specific storyline, if that makes any sense,
they definitely fleshed it out more than they let it develop a little, they let it breathe a bit more than they have before.
I was like looking stuff like that, I was kind of like looking for interesting details, and one I'll always going to be obsessing about now after I watched it was trying to figure out how they came up with the book that he's reading like a book by the actor David Niven. You know, The Moon's a Balloon, which I guess was one of his, might have been his memoir or some other biographical book that he wrote. If anyone doesn't know who David Niven is, an acclaimed British actor who's in a lot of movies, including like The Pink Panther and a bunch of others. Here's a question, though, I was thinking when I was watching the whole scene. How much time do you think has passed since Saul Goodman became Gene? I've been thinking about this. How much time do you think has passed since he left New Mexico?
I would guess that it's probably somewhere from, I don't know.
Because he's
they're
emphasizing his hair and his hair loss. Although his hair was always kind of weird looking to begin with, so it was always kind of suspicious. But I feel like a certain amount of time has passed, a big chunk of time has passed, but I don't know how much time.
Yeah, because, he's still freaked out and skittish and paranoid, which, he's been through some shit, and I guess maybe that doesn't just go away. But, for him to, be the general manager of a franchise thing, there are, steps you have to go through to, be able to actually, do that kind of thing. So, I don't know.
It's funny that you would go there, because of your previous experience, not previous, your experience.
Current.
Although, wasn't that it was like the joke that was on Breaking Bad that he'll end up managing a Cinnabon in Nebraska or something, which is exactly what he ended up doing. It's also interesting that someone, when he was Saul, if there was one thing he was not big on doing, for any number of reasons, it was being a snitch. And he snitches on that kid right off the bat. But then he has a little burst of Saul Goodman, I guess. When he yells, "Say nothing, get a lawyer." Of course, the kid's not very receptive to him since he knows he just turned him in. But it reminded me of when you go back to season two, the thing you were talking about when he's trapped in the room where the garbage is. And I think one of the last things you see in that moment is he engraves into the wall like SG was here. So you see he's still missing the life of Saul Goodman, much like in the pilot when you realize he's watching his old commercials. So it's funny that we've seen these now at least three times we've bounced over to Nebraska, at least in the opening of these seasons, and we never see him missing being Jimmy. We see that he's missing being Saul. I find that very interesting, since the show is constructed in a way where it's supposed to be a tragedy that he becomes Saul Goodman, but I guess maybe Gene is even worse than Saul because he's just so depressed, you know, and he's so alone. So, and I guess he misses the energy of Saul. But it's just interesting that he wouldn't have rewound that clock a little bit more back to Jimmy. That, like, if I had Vince Gilligan in the room, that's a question I would actually ask him. I don't know if they've asked him in any of these interview shows, but I'm kind of curious about it.
Yeah, maybe. Well, you know, I mean, and I guess before he was Jimmy, I mean, I guess he was more Saul-like when he was slipping Jimmy.
Right.
So maybe he just really, really dug that shit and whatever. But I definitely, you know, I found how conflicted he definitely seems to be in this future timeline. I find that to be, you know, somewhat comforting, but also, like, really sad at the same time, if that makes any sense.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially being surrounded by all that cinnamon. But
yeah.
So then we have the stuff between him and Chuck, which I think is clearly going to be one of the two major stories of the entire season and the major thrust of the season, much as it was last season. Did you think that when I was trying to figure this out, because I'm tired, but the whole moment where they're together and they're, you know, peeling the foil off the wall and how he shows them how to peel the foil off and everything. I was like staring at it. I was like, I feel like we're going for a metaphor here. And I was struggling in my head because I'm tired. But like, what would the metaphor be? And then I realized what was happening. Because what are they doing? They're peeling back, you know, this shiny covering. And what happens is he unearths a memory. So he's literally doing what they're figuratively doing. You know what I mean? Because he takes out the book, the Adventures of Mabel, and that's when they actually have this brief bonding, you know, like a brief sentimental journey, if you will, I guess, which doesn't last very long. I noticed. I mean, it maybe it lasts 2 or 3 minutes tops, and maybe not even that long.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think Jimmy said it was like, you know, 10 minutes that Chuck didn't like him, and of course he was.
It was 10 minutes, but in actual TV time, that was not 10 minutes. 10 minutes would be more than an act, so it wasn't 10 minutes. But the interesting thing here for me, and a question that comes to mind, is about Chuck. So. I think this applies to both of us, really. I mean, I wouldn't exactly say that we were, you know, Team Chuck last season, but I do believe, if I recall correctly, to a large extent, we very much understood his perspective. You know, I don't think we saw him quite as a villain the way a lot of other people tended to. If I'm recalling, I mean, obviously he's in opposition to Jimmy, we're inclined to root for Jimmy, but we kind of understood where he was coming from. I think it made him more interesting. It made me, in a weird way, it's kind of like the way when we talk about Pete Campbell on Mad Men, where a lot of people see him as, you know, he's a bad guy, whatever, but we kind of we can still understand his reasoning or his perspective here.
Yeah, for both of these characters, we're able to play advocate's advocate.
Yeah. Very nice. Advocate's advocate, I like that. However, what we see him do in this episode, a couple different scenes, obviously when he tells Jimmy he's going to make him pay, but also how he acts with Howard later and then Ernesto, he seems much more fueled by a vindictive rage or revenge. I'm kind of thinking, is Chuck really going to be more of a villain this season than I truly think he was last season? That's my feeling. What do you think is his scheme here? because I initially thought, oh, he's going to use it to drive, to shatter the relationship between Kim and Jimmy. But then the stuff that happens with Ernesto, which clearly seems by design, I don't think it's an accident that Ernesto hears the tape. That was even brought up on, just to be honest, that was actually brought up on Talking Saul. They didn't really say one way or the other, but someone there said that seemed to be something that was done deliberately. It might have been Chris Hardwick himself who said it, I don't know. But I was thinking that myself. But I'm trying to figure out what Chuck's really planning to do, because, you know, as we later see the scene with Howard, that doesn't work as evidence, and it's not going to work to get their client back. So, but what is it Chuck's going to use it for? Other than Kim, I can't really think of anything, but then the Ernesto thing kind of threw me. I mean, does anything occur to you, or do you think it's going to be about the Kim situation, or do you think it's something else?
Well, I mean, he definitely wants to get revenge on Jimmy for, you know, Jimmy making him look bad for, you know, the stuff that led to him falling and schmucking himself in the copy shop and all that. So I think he's definitely is being very vindictive here, and, you know, probably rightfully so, because I suppose I would be very, I mean, I get pretty enraged about far lesser things than that, depending on the day. And I suppose we both do. Yes. But I definitely think we're going to see something where, like, you know, Chuck's definitely going to lose the moral high ground as he's kind of like, you know, I wouldn't say he'll become like more and more like Jimmy, but like in his like efforts to, like, you know, just be all, you know, just and, you know, get revenge and stuff, he's just going to end up becoming like, you know, yeah, he's just going to lose the moral high ground.
Right. And
just end
up, you know. Oh, yeah. I absolutely. I mean, his actions with the recording already kind of pushed him in that direction already. And one could also say, well, if you look back on what he did to Jimmy throughout his life, you know, kind of like being an obstacle to him, there was an element there as well.
Well, yeah. And that, so like, kind of like the inverse thing happens. So, like, you know, whenever Jimmy's trying to be good, Chuck tends, you know, might make the situation worse, and just like, it just doesn't happen. So this will be like, you know, the opposite of that, where, you know, whatever stuff that Jimmy has done will, you know, lead to Chuck becoming like worse, or, you know, Chuck probably was kind of an asshole for the most part in the first place. But I definitely think we're going to see, like, you know, Chuck's plans just, you know, scorched, or if he wants to just fuck up everything to do with Jimmy, you know, mess up the Kim thing, you know, screw Ernesto. If he knows that Ernesto. He obviously, you know, he's setting him up, and he knows Ernesto's going to tell Jimmy. So obviously he doesn't mind using Ernesto, and, you know, fuck him. You know, he'll just do whatever it takes here.
But what's interesting, though, also is if you move beyond, you know, Jimmy, who, although at times he means well, he's still a corrupting influence. You know, he plays fast and loose with the rules, to put it mildly. You know, he does more than just cut corners, quite frankly. He's got, you know, and Chuck also is doing stuff, you know, with this recording and what he had done before, but it's impacting other people who become either unwitting or unwilling, but they have to go along with it, accomplices. You know, I mean, both, like, Chuck now, with the recording and playing it for him and the whole thing, has kind of made Howard complicit in whatever this is going on. And Kim is certainly actually complicit in what Jimmy did, because who benefited from it? Who was the beneficiary of it? It was her. And she knows. She might not know exactly what was done, although I'm trying to remember now. I feel like she does know to a certain extent. But she doesn't report it. She's still going along with it. So it's interesting that they're graying at best moral outlooks or perspectives seem to be clouding other people as well. Something like that. I don't know. Something much more artsy sounding than that. Again, late at night.
I'm looking forward to seeing what role Howard will end up playing in this too, because he definitely doesn't seem too on board with what Chuck did, even though he thinks, you know, Jimmy's a conniving bastard. So it'll be interesting to see, like, what his agenda ends up being here, and if he ends up, you know, just pulling some crazy shit, doing, you know, whatever. I just there's
What's really interesting with Howard is, on one hand, as we learned in a previous, you know, previous season, maybe it's, I guess, the end of, was it the end of season one? When we, yeah, it's towards the end of season one when we realize, oh, Howard's actually not such a bad guy. That, in a way, he was kind of forced to do a lot, or do or say a lot of the things because of the situation that Chuck put him in. Kind of,
yeah, he was being in, like, you know, like the Chuck's proxy douche.
Right. So I'm mentioning that because, to a certain extent, obviously, Howard was already aware of the situation between these two brothers. But I think now, seeing what's happened, I think Howard has a totally different perspective. Maybe not a totally different perspective. It's a heightened perspective. Because, wow, look at what Jimmy did to screw over his brother. And look what his brother's now doing, you know, and seeming to plot to get at her. To get back at Jimmy. That's,
yeah.
I can't imagine Howard wants to be dealing with that.
No, it's already proven to be bad for business with this one particular account.
Yeah.
But just the fact that, you know, Chuck himself is starting to behave in an unsavory fashion, and I'm guessing Howard isn't going to want, you know, that is also bad for business. So yeah. Since how, you know, Chuck is still a part of, you know, a big part of this thing. I mean. Howard might want to find a way to extricate himself from this these McGill-ass clowns.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious, like you were saying, I mean, I am curious to see how that plays out because, you know, at a certain point, I think, at least from what I've seen, Howard still, even if he seemed like a douche at times, he still plays above board. And now Chuck is dipping into, you know, below the table shenanigans or whatever. So I guess we'll see how that all plays out. And what makes this all kind of tragic, of course, is when you have these moments with Chuck and you know, scheming, juxtaposed with, you know, a moment like when Jimmy says to Kim that, you know, that the line that you mentioned that for 10 minutes, you know, Chuck didn't hate him and he had forgotten what that felt like. That's just sad. You know.
Oh yeah.
And Jimmy's got the glum face, his downturned lips. So, switching over to Mike, this was another one of those episodes where you get a lot of the Jimmy stuff, which tends to be very dialogue driven, and then you get a lot of Mike stuff, which often tends to not be dialogue driven. I've noticed that a lot of the Mike stuff tends to be not that much dialogue until he's actually interacting with someone, but it's tends to be Mike on his own. I feel like they've done that several times on the show.
Which, yeah, with the Mike stuff, and especially like this episode in particular, I mean, they're definitely letting Dave Porter do the heavy lifting with, like, you know, just really like tense, cool music that kind of gets their, you know, hearts pumping a little bit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. When he's in the station wagon and he's like beating it, and it's like, oh, I'm really loving the
music. Oh yeah. Here. Yeah, that brings us back a few years to the glory days of Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah, man. I was thinking, wait, is that Walter? Oh, it's Mike. Okay. So, yeah, again, the Mike story picks up where that left off with the his car horn blaring because someone stuck a stick in it, and there's a note saying "don't." And of course, as Vince Gilligan was just saying on Talking Saul, probably the worst kept secret in TV or Hollywood or whatever it was, is that, oh yeah, Gus Fring's coming back. We didn't see him in this episode, but we know he's coming. He's actually in the ad for the next episode, so there's no point in trying to keep that secret. They start promoting the show with Gus Fring commercials, so they weren't even attempting to keep that secret at this point. But obviously, Mike doesn't know what's going on yet, so we get this whole thing where he takes the car to a junkyard and essentially, you know, takes the thing apart trying to find the tracking device. And I didn't pick up on this until, you know, Talking Saul. That scene is meant to play as a bit of an homage to a scene from The French Connection where they're also taking apart a car looking for a surveillance device that was planted in it. I did not pick up on that, and I'm a 70s movie guy, so I feel very foolish. But I was trying to figure it out. I know this is not really that important, but I don't care. So he takes it to a junkyard, and I was thinking, you know, there were a couple different junkyards that were used on Breaking Bad, and I was trying to determine if this was one of them or not. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's not the one that, you know, that ends up having the standoff between Hank and Jesse with the RV.
It's definitely not that one, and it's not the one where, like, Jesse falls into the porta potty either. So this must just be like another unsavory thing. Maybe we've seen it on this show before, and that's why it seemed familiar.
And then you have the one where Tuco kills his henchman. And oh, by the way, that's the correct use of the word henchman, just in case certain listeners are listening. So it would be funny, like, if they're all different junkyards, like, how many junkyards are there in Albuquerque? But, I'm guessing maybe it's a new location. I don't know. I mean, I get it's not important, but I know we like to find little connections between locations between this show and Breaking Bad, because they have done that quite often. And I thought that this might have been an irresistible moment to do that. However, I'm not clear, and I could be wrong about this. I probably am, and I don't want to take the time to go on IMDb to check it out. I'm trying to remember if the actor who played the guy who was running the junkyard in the RV episode, and I think he's also in the one with the super magnet, if I'm not mistaken. I'm trying to think if that actor has passed away or not. I have this weird feeling he did, and if he didn't, I'm sorry. Because if he didn't die, I'm almost surprised they didn't take advantage of trying to bring him back or something. But he might be dead. I have a weird feeling he's dead. Someone check that out and let us know on Facebook, or I'll check it out after we record. And
I know him from a few episodes of Star Trek, so I probably would have seen that in like the Star Trek news if he had. But it's still possible that I missed it.
He was like he was also like an annoying neighbor on Friends or something, if I recall. So anyway, getting back to this, I'm trying to think of anything else that was kind of interesting. So, or anything pop into your head while I'm flipping through my notes here?
No, I definitely, you know, there's a lot to think about tracking devices and motivations and what Mike was thinking this episode. And I definitely had, you know, some difficulty figuring out exactly, like, you know, just what was going on. And, like, I mean, you know, he obviously knows he's being tracked, but whoever, you know, is tracking him knows what he's doing and doesn't want him to kill, you know, doesn't want him to shoot Hector or whoever he's going to shoot there. So if he already knew what he was doing and didn't want him to do it, then why would he need to track him in the first place? Maybe just to, like, you know when he was going to do it. But if they, you know, had an idea that he was going to do that, I mean, if you know what I'm saying, just like I have a hard time just tying together exactly, like, you know, all of that.
Well, I think the assumption is that he was probably tracking him for some time. Once he made connection to between the Tuco situation, and then especially when he encountered Salamanca for the first time, because these were all people, you know, whatever tier they may be on or level they may be on, who are all connected to in one way or another to Gus Fring. And my assumption would be after the whole thing happened between him and Tuco, with the gun and everything, and how he acted after that, which suddenly made him something more than just some average guy. There was something going on with him. I think from that point on, they were probably tracking him, would be my guess. And once they realized that's where he was going, and there, you know, that's where the note appeared. I mean, there's a little bit of magic going on here, but, you know, I think we go along with it because it works in terms of, you know, the dramatic structure of the story.
And I'm sure we'll know next week or the week after that, you know, exactly the why.
Well, I mean, at this point in time, Gus is working with, you know, the whatever's left of the cartel and Salamanca and all those guys, because, you know, they haven't killed all those people off as of yet. And again, we're still waiting to see if Gus Fring himself has a direct connection to why Salamanca ends up looking like a stroke victim in the wheelchair, or if it turns out to be Mike or someone or something totally unrelated. That, I think that is one of the things I think we're waiting to see happen, because it has to happen. So
yeah, we're waiting for a Chekhov stroke.
I am looking forward to whenever it does happen.
And that wasn't Star Trek Chekhov there, by the way, just so everybody knows.
I know, because, you know, how many Trek references are you going to push into this one? So flipping back to Jimmy for a moment, a scene I didn't want us to skip over casually here. When Jimmy has the encounter with Captain Bauer, who was in the episode from last season, the Fifi episode. And my TV that was on pause just went off pause in the other room. So if you hear any sound in the background, that's a TV in the other room. I apologize. Hopefully it's not too loud. So that was kind of an interesting scene because I'll tell you why. Why I think it's an interesting scene, I should say. I don't know if it's correct or not. Because we've seen Jimmy playing these scenes against Chuck. And as you were saying before about, you know, Chuck having the moral high ground. But we know Chuck's full of shit. You know, Chuck has done a lot of fucking shady stuff just to keep his brother down and stuff. And the fact is that, you know, Kim is a very moral person. You can see there, it even feels like there is a bit of a rift developing between them because of her having to take on his cases at the law firm. And I think they kind of really give us a little bit, speaking of metaphors, the fact that Jimmy is painting over a rainbow and just is kind of, I think, kind of speaks volumes as far as I was concerned. But his scene with this guy, this captain from the Air Force, this is like a purely good, upstanding person where he's pretty much black and white. There's no shades of gray here. So it kind of plays off almost the exact opposite of what, maybe not what Jimmy is right now, but what he's going to become. And the fact is, I think in this scene, he's a bit more Saul Goodman-esque than we see him in any other part of the episode. If that makes any sense?
Yep.
And so I would ask you a couple things. First of all, when he has his little when Jimmy has a little outburst during the scene, was it more like something that was meant to be directed at Chuck rather than this guy? Because it sounded like he was yelling at Chuck at that point.
Yeah, that was the impression that I got, definitely.
It's interesting because it means that he kind of, despite what Chuck has done to him, because remember, he knew, that was that great episode at the end of season one, in a weird way, he still views Chuck like this. Like, despite what Chuck had done, he's still the morally superior person to him, like this captain is. And hence that's why I think it channels that rage in him, I thought. At least that's the way I was taking it. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, because Jimmy's the one who still, if given the opportunity, would still want to have a great relationship with his brother, where I think it's clear Chuck has no interest in ever rebonding with his brother again, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're done, though.
Now, there's a line I think the captain has here. He says something like one day the wheel will turn, kind of like saying when karma's going to get you, whatever. And I was listening to it, and it's one of those lines that you kind of wonder, are they kind of like foreshadowing something on this series? Or are they just foreshadowing what ends up happening years later on Breaking Bad? I think it works either way, but I kind of like to think it's a Breaking Bad thing more than what's going to happen on this show. Although it could be both, quite frankly, because I'm pretty sure he's headed for tragedy on this show as well.
Oh yeah.
Another nice thing about this episode is they kind of gave us a nice balance, because I think everyone got their little portion of real estate in the episode, even on their own. Kim certainly had a couple really nice scenes, I thought.
Yeah, her confidence or whatever is definitely, kind of foobar now based on this, the stuff that happened behind the scenes between Jimmy and Chuck. I mean, it's definitely getting to her, and she, it'll be sad to see her, because I'm assuming we'll continue to see it erode and as the story moves forward.
Yes, her obsessive nature with the, is it a semicolon? Is it a double dash? Yeah. Is it a period?
Yeah.
No. Believe me, I know what that's about.
What punctuation should she have used there?
I cheat. Oh, I'm speaking as the quote unquote writer here. But if anyone ever reads any of my screenplays or pretty much anything I write, quite frankly, it will be a Facebook posting, it could be an email. When in doubt, I just fall back on the double dash, even though I know that's probably not the right one. But it's never technically wrong. It's kind of like cheating. So I guess I jimmy it, so to speak. I don't know if I'd seen the entire structure of that paragraph or the sentence before and after, I would know if that was a semicolon, a proper usage of a semicolon or not. I'm going to assume that I think that's where she ended up resolving it to be. That probably was the way to go. Technically, probably all three are acceptable, because if it's starting an entirely new thought, it could be a period. If you just want to be kind of like stylish, you can do the double dash and get away with it. I don't think you would do a double dash in a legal document, though. I think that's where I would probably say no. It's got to be a more official form of punctuation, like a period or a semicolon. I've read enough legal documents to know they love semicolons in legal documents. they pop up almost as much as commas, quite frankly, I've noticed. So that was definitely probably the way to go. So I think she made the right decision. But of course, we know that that whole scene wasn't about her just obsessing about grammar. You know, it's something that means something else. You know, it's another, whether you want to call it a metaphor or what. I think her being aware of what had happened and how she ended up with this massive account, it's kind of eating away at her a little bit.
I'm just imagining her punctuation breakdown and just like somebody watching the show that doesn't understand subtext, just like having like no idea what's going on at all. Sucks to be them.
She'd be like, oh, what, really? The show's now about a grammar Nazi? That's what I'm watching now. But again, I'm glad we got some nice moments with her between the semicolon scene, and as well as that scene earlier on when she's dealing with that with the old lady and her will, or I think it was her will. It was something where they were trying to decide the who would get a house or something, and she was obsessing about her garden and her lily pond and whatever. And I kept thinking, oh, this is kind of like one of Jimmy's type of clients. And then we realized, oh, it actually would have been one of Jimmy's clients. So
yeah, I think it's unfortunate, because I think we both like to see Kim happy, and I just don't think that there's going to be a lot of seeing Kim happy from this point forward. Maybe brief moments, but I guess it's just going to be worse and worse, and it's going to suck, because I think we're both rather fond of her.
I worry that the most fun we'll ever have seen her have is when she was kind of doing the con job thing with Jimmy for a brief moment there before she snapped out of it. But the last takeaway I'll give you from watching Talking Saul, kind of an elementary thing that they said, but and they said right at the top of the show about how they foresaw coming into this season how they were proceeding with the show, and both Gould and Gilligan both said that they're definitely trying to make it a darker and more complicated show in season 3, which appeals to me, you know.
Oh yeah.
So I mean that. Not our thing. Yeah, not that the show was all light and you know rainbows and chocolate unicorns or anything, but if you think about it, it makes sense, because the further the show goes on, which means it's the closer the characters whatever get to Breaking Bad, so in a way, that's where the tone will start to become closer to Breaking Bad, which I think we can agree. Breaking Bad is kind of a dark, complicated show. So,
yep.
It makes perfect sense. No.
Well, yeah, we both like TV shows that, you know, provoke some thought and stir some unsettling emotions and make us feel a little uncomfortable at times. I mean, you know, we don't mind our, like, you know, stuff that's just, like, cool and shot well and that kind of thing, but we definitely like to, like, you know, have stuff to think about for a while.
Yeah. And
talk about. Right. Where we are.
I mean, and I think if one watches enough TV, you can find a balance anyway. I mean, I can watch a show like, if this show continues to get darker and become one of those kind of shows, I'm all for it. You know, I don't think it's ever going to get Hannibal dark, you know, so we've dealt with dark before, certainly. Because, you know, I watch shows that aren't, you know, I've got, you know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend I watch, which actually It's kind of disturbing now that I think about it. Maybe there is a little bit of darkness in that show. We just kind of ignore it. Never mind. We're talking about Better Call Saul. So I'm really looking forward to where they're going to go this season. I mean, I'll be a big Breaking Bad geek and say I am really looking forward to seeing Giancarlo Esposito again in the original mode of Gus Fring. I am fascinated to find out how the relationship between him and Mike, and of course, Jimmy/Saul. Because it'll be interesting to know that Gus Fring will know Saul Goodman before he was Saul Goodman, if that's where the story goes. I mean, I guess it kind of almost has to, unless they keep those storylines separate the entire time. So,
yeah, I don't know. I didn't get the impression that, like, that Saul really knew that much about Fring before. I mean, we'd have to rewatch the last few episodes of season two of Breaking Bad, but I definitely, you know, thought that was something like, you know, I don't know.
I thought he did. I thought he did because he knew that he was working with Mike, but he knew that, but Mike was Fring's guy, not his guy, which is why Mike like would threaten Saul at times, or even didn't he kind of beat him up a little bit once or something like that, or at least he
did. Yeah.
It's been a while. I know some of our friends did a Breaking Bad rewatch recently. It's another show that I've yet to do a rewatch of.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah, I keep meaning to. I still have them all here, even though obviously I could just watch them on Netflix, but for some reason I own them. One of these days I will. Maybe
in April and May we should rewatch and then podcast about that.
Yes, because we don't have enough to podcast about between the superhero silliness and Fargo and Better Call Saul. So I feel like we've kind of we're looking forward to the rest of the season. We're looking forward to podcasting about this, and we're looking forward to seeing how it goes when we kind of merge two of our podcasts together. So I think we're done here. I think we can get to the end of the podcast. Am I right? I think I'm right.
Yeah. So were you satisfied with what you saw? Was it nice, or did it feel like too much of a setup episode, or did it just feel like, you know, just like, you know, a natural progression that wasn't jarring in any way, and just the next step of the puzzle?
I feel with this show, if I recall the first couple episodes of both seasons, previous seasons, there's always going to be a certain amount of setting up. I felt it bothered me. Okay, let me put it this way. It never bothered me before. I think it bothered me even less this time because we were continuing where we left off. So now we're just like, oh, I want there to be an element of mystery of what is Chuck really up to. I don't want to know Chuck's whole plan in the first episode. That's not interesting. Then we're just waiting for it to happen. Same with the stuff with Mike and where that's going. Yes.
Yeah, we didn't want to, you know, I mean, Mike didn't make a lot of progression this episode, but we didn't want to see him run into Fring halfway through the episode, and then you already know what's going on. I mean, I guess we don't mind if the good shows take their time getting from point A to point B.
Yeah, it's fun just to watch an actor at work because, you know, he's acting with his body, with his shoulders, with his face.
Yeah.
I mean, when you just watch him, you know, hulking back and forth when he walks from his car to his house all the time, and you realize, oh, he's got a way of walking. And it is somewhat different. I've seen Jonathan Banks. He does carry himself differently when he's the part than the way he is in real life. So acting is more than just saying a line, as most people, I think, know already. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, it was pretty much, it just, like we said, it picked up where the last one left off. And we loved season two. And this is right where that left off. Plus, knowing that Gus Fring is showing up. Now, so Peter Gould mentioned something about someone showing up in the next episode that should make Breaking Bad fans very happy. And this was after they were talking about Gus Fring. So I don't know if that means it will be someone else, or Gould is just being a boob and he actually just meant Gus Fring. I couldn't really tell because he's a bit goofier than Gilligan is, quite frankly.
Yeah. Should we guess who it is?
Go ahead.
I'm gonna guess we see a like pre-Meth Whore version of
Oh My Dream.
Uh, Wendy the Meth Whore.
It's been my dream for her to show up on the show. Because
maybe she works at a Los Pollos and ends up getting, like, you know, whatever, I don't know.
That would be wonderful. I mean, I've been saying I've been wrong for two seasons already. I've been saying since we first started podcasting, we're going to see her pre-meth, because I've seen the actress. She's perfectly fine looking, you know, pretty, whatever. And that it'll be fun to see if people even recognize her. But
yeah, maybe she'll just be an employee in the background filling up a glass of root beer at Los Pollos.
Well, who knows? I mean, I know Brian Cranston is directing one of the upcoming episodes, so maybe she'll show up in that one. You know, maybe bring in some former co-stars. Although I don't recall if he ever interacted with her. No, I don't think he did. She interacted with Jesse, and she interacted with Hank. I don't think she would have had a reason to interact with Walter White. That's who I'd love. I would love that. that would be my choice if I could pick someone. But since I want to pick someone different, assuming it's not Gus Fring, who would make? Well, that she would actually make Breaking Bad fans really happy. Who else? Okay, I'm gonna say maybe someone like out of nowhere. Okay, we know that Jesse may or may not ever show up on this show, and it's not obviously not anytime soon if he ever does. However, I think it's very possible one of his buddies could show up on the show at any point in time. I think there's no reason why. What were their names now? There's a guy.
Badger, Skinny Pete, and Combo.
There you go. Badger would be more surprising, I think, but I could see one of the other two showing up. That would be kind of fun, and it could be something as silly as just them picking up chicken at Los Pollos. Honestly,
I kind of hope we don't see Jesse, because I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Aaron Paul went from like looking 20 to looking like 35, and like. One like overnight, so they would take some doing. You remember like the series finale or whatever episode it was where they had a flashback, like, you know, towards the end. I mean, he did not look fucking young anymore. So nothing wrong with that. He's aged well, but they're not. Good luck pulling that off.
They might need to do some CGI wizardry to really pull it off. But you know, anything's possible. You know, we never even thought this show would be possible several years ago. So anything is possible. Okay, I think now would actually be a good time to wrap things up. So is that what we should be doing? Yes. Say yes.
I have one more question for you. No, I'm just fucking with you. Let's go.
It's quarter after one in the morning.
I know.
So time to wrap things up. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you will enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Type that in Facebook. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Better Call Saul and so many others. You can find us on iTunes the very same way, Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And finally, you can follow us on the Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Now, by the way, as I'm wrapping this all up, you might hear some music playing in the background, depending if Dan's able to get it done. That music you're hearing is actually a selection from Johnny Pate's score to a 70s Fred Williamson flick, Brother on the Run. Sadly, you can't find this specific piece of music on iTunes, otherwise I'd say, hey, go download this on iTunes, buy it. You can find other things from that score, but not this one, apparently. So this might be something worth hunting down in some rare vinyl record shop in your, you know, little town or wherever you guys are out there. Anyway, Dan and I kind of felt between the vibe of this music and the title, which seems oddly appropriate for both Better Call Saul and what we think might be one of the upcoming plot lines on the next season of Fargo. It kind of is something that kind of works for both shows, so it's going to be our music for the quote-unquote Better Call Fargo podcast moving forward.
Yeah, I'll take a look at some of the non-iTunes music options, because maybe sometimes Amazon has stuff that they don't have. So just because it is a kind of a cool, fun piece of music. Yeah. So.
Of course, we may just end up going back to Dr. John or something, depending on our moods or whatever. But I thought this was a kind of a cool piece.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, although I have a feeling that maybe we might come up with some sort of silly tagline for our future podcasts, I think for this one, I'm just going to say goodnight. So, goodnight, Dan.
Goodnight, Scott.